Hi, this is Heather Esposito, and this is Leadership by Design. Welcome to this week's episode of Leadership by Design. We're going to try something a little different. I'm doing a solo episode this week because I realized that in all of these episodes, we have never gone through the guiding principles that guide our leadership development work. These guiding principles were created before we even developed the leadership model. And I personally find these so inspirational that they're hanging on my wall next to my desk. And I thought that it might be useful because it would inform some of our approach. It informs about the things that we take on as a leadership development team. And I wanted to share them all with you. So there are 10 guiding principles. We're going to dig in. I'm going to share a little bit, maybe of some personal stories that go along with them, and some where appropriate, the researchers who we draw from that inform some of that work in case you're interested in digging a little deeper. So before we get started, I'm going to go over all 10 guiding principles and then we'll break them down one by one. Number one, personal development comes first. Stretching ourselves creates the gap that necessitates our own personal development. Number two, develop leadership in others. Find and unleash the potential within our teams. Number three, development does not happen in a vacuum. Collective development that recognizes the value of inclusion and diversity accelerates our progress and increases our accountability. Number four, choose courage over comfort. Number five, the inner game runs the outer game. We develop competence and consciousness simultaneously. Number six, psychological safety is critical to the vulnerability needed for transformation, which ties in closely with principle seven, businesses transform only when the people do. Number eight, you can't solve adaptive challenges with technical solutions. Number nine, the best learning comes through the experience of doing, so practice in the flow of work. And number 10, leadership development is for all leaders. Now let's jump in. The first guiding principle for our leadership development work is that personal development comes first. Meaning as a leader, I have to take on my personal development before I can worry about the personal development of my team. And the way that I do that comes out of some of Robert Keegan's work. Robert Keegan is a researcher from Harvard. He's best known for his work around adult development theory and also the idea of deliberately developmental organizations. And I love this concept because it's like taking a learning organization and putting it on steroids. So organizations that talk about being learning organizations mean that they want to learn from the things that they try. It's okay if they're not always successful, as long as we're learning what's working and what's not, and we're iterating and moving forward. Learning organizations adopt a growth mindset. And they just really hold this idea that we're holding a space for learning. Well, I think that when you put this on steroids is where you get to the deliberately developmental organization. And so they believe that learning is important and critical, but they take it one step further by saying, we're going to deliberately hold ourselves in a developmental space that necessitates us to grow. And so the way I think about that personally as a leader is when I choose to stretch myself and to put a developmental goal in front of me, when I do that, it creates a gap between where I am right now and either what I need in order to be successful or what I want in order to achieve and accomplish the things that I want. And so that idea of holding myself in a deliberately developmental space, that's what fosters and contributes to my own growth. And so as we think about how we approach learning in that developmental space, first and foremost, it is about fostering a growth mindset. We've got a couple great podcast episodes on growth mindset with Trevor Reagan from the Learner Lab. And this idea of growth mindset is about that I fundamentally have a belief in my capacity to learn and grow. Yes, some of us are endowed with certain skills and talents, but regardless of that, I believe that if I'm willing to work at it and I'm willing to challenge myself, that I can grow in anything that I want to. And so this idea that I have to do that for myself first is our first guiding principle. And so how do we help support our leaders on being able to tackle their own personal development? Then we get to guiding principle number two, which is the natural outflow of that. A leader's role is to develop leadership in others. And so by modeling this for myself, it allows me to also live into our value of we are all extraordinary. And if we believe that each person is extraordinary, then my role as a leader is to find and unlock that potential within others and to keep a growth mindset about them and their development. If you remember in that early episode we did with Trevor, he talked about the Pygmalion effect of leadership and how what I believe about my team members can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If I believe that you are not capable of learning and growing and developing, well, then I'm never going to give you the opportunities and put you into situations where you can grow and develop because I've already predetermined that you can't. Conversely, if I do believe that about you and I see you as a learner, then I'm going to continually give you opportunities to learn. And when I give you feedback, I'm going to give you feedback as if you are a learner. And that is going to encourage you to also have a growth mindset about yourself. Now, here at Miller Knoll, we believe that the best way to develop leadership in others is through using coaching conversations. We've had a couple of great episodes with coaches about what it really means to create a coaching culture, to create an environment where we're asking questions that help people discover for themselves and to help them find that within themselves and to chart their own path of development. So that is really what that second guiding principle is about, is after I've taken my own personal development to heart first, then how can I help develop the leadership capabilities of others, keeping a growth mindset about them and using the skill of coaching and to foster and have those coaching conversations is the very best way to do this. And this is personally so important for me, and it's something that I hold very dear, because I think I've spoken about it on the podcast. I had a leader, and this was back when we did annual performance reviews. At the end of every review, the one question they would ask was, how do you want to stretch and grow yourself this next year? And I don't know, maybe I took that question differently than others did, but I really leaned into that question. And if it was something that I thought that I could do easily, so it was just a goal, something I wanted to accomplish, it wouldn't make the list. It might make my list of goals, but it wouldn't answer the question how I wanted to stretch and grow myself. I really always tried to put something out there that would make me a little uncomfortable, that would push me just outside my comfort zone. And that really leads into some of Jennifer Garvey Berger's work. And Lauren talked about it on her episode with Unlocking Leadership Mind Traps. But that idea of living at your growth edge, pushing yourself beyond just what you thought was possible, or having a belief in someone that's just beyond what they could see for themselves, holds them in that developmental space and helps us to grow past what we thought we might could do. So those first two principles really lean into that work. It's embedded into our get-together process when we ask that third question about our growth area over the next 90 days. And then the third guiding principle also still sits and focuses on this idea of development. But so far, we've really talked about individual development. How do I hold myself personally accountable to my own growth? How am I helping the individuals on my team to grow? But we also believe that development doesn't occur best in a vacuum. And so we embrace this idea of collective development, or development within a group or team. And this could be true of an intact team, or it could be a group of people that come together, that learn together in a learning community. But when we embrace collective development, so many things can happen that accelerate and amplify the work we're doing to develop individually. And this really is an outflow of our value that we believe we're better together. And if we're better together, and I am coming and doing development work in the group or the team setting, then I get a whole level of support and I get a whole level of accountability that I wouldn't be able to accomplish by myself. And I'll give you an example. So let's say as a leader, I said, I really want to work on my courageous authenticity. I want to speak up. I want to use my voice. I want to share my perspective. And maybe that's been a challenge for me up to this point. And so if I'm working on that individually, I have to remember when I'm in those settings and I want to hold what I'm saying because of a fear of what people might think or a fear of how it might be received. Like, I'm accountable to myself to do that. If I've shared it with a group or I've shared it with my team or I've shared it with my peers, then I can ask them to support me and help me stay accountable to that. And so it might sound something like this. Right now, my growth area is that I'm working on speaking up and sharing my perspective when I might want to hold back or be quiet. And so what you could do to help me is if you notice that in a meeting that I haven't spoken up or I haven't shared my perspective, if you could call on me and just say, Heather, we haven't heard from you on this. How are you thinking about this? Then that's also a prompt and a reminder to work on that developmental area. And now I'm not only accountable to myself, I'm accountable to my team, and my team can be a powerful support for me, and I can do that for them in their developmental areas. Because what we know is when we're hiding those things, that we're only as strong as that weakest link. And if I forget, or I'm not willing to step into that area of development, then I can not only hold myself back, but I can hold the team back. And so when we take on collective development, it helps us work towards our goals of inclusion and diversity, because we make sure that everyone has a space at the table. We're all level set. Nobody's less than because they're working on an area of development. We start to normalize that development is how we're all getting better. So whether mine is working on speaking up courageously or someone else is working on how to think in more of a systems perspective, or someone else is working on building a relatability with their teams, like that's how we can come together. And it's not something that we have to hide from. It's something that we can celebrate and help each other to achieve. When we do that, of course, not only does our individual development get accelerated, but so does the progress of the team. And our accountability increases because we've really embraced and normalized this idea of being developmental. So those first three guiding principles really are the crux of our work. Taking on our own development as job one, developing others, and then not just developing ourselves as individuals, but developing in the collective. Super important work. The fourth piece is kind of, I would say, probably an outflow of that idea of stretching ourselves and living at our growth edge. And it's work that we borrow from the research of Brené Brown. And it also flows out of our value of we are difference makers. And if we believe that we are difference makers, our job as a leader is to inspire impact. And to inspire impact, we need to encourage people to and encourage ourselves to choose courage over comfort. If we're in our comfort zones, then we're probably not taking the risks. We're not being as creative and innovative as we could be because we're choosing the safe route. And for those of you who have heard me talk about the neuroscience of that, it makes complete sense. We want to take a safe route because it's safe for us. Like that's what our brain's wired to do, is to keep ourselves safe above all else. And so being courageous or being brave or trying something new can feel very vulnerable and feel very risky. But it's also the one thing that we need to really move forward and accomplish the things that we want to. So choosing courage over comfort is one of our guiding principles. And we do that in our own work as individuals, but we also do it in how we approach our leadership development work. All right. So number five comes out of one of my favorite leadership books, and that's Mastering Leadership, written by Bob Anderson and Bill Adams. Both of these gentlemen are great friends of mine, have been great supporters. Bill, we featured on one of our early podcasts. And so much of their work is centered around developing our consciousness or the maturity of our mind at the same time that we're developing our competence and our skill. This is where another way to describe that, I would say, is that there is this belief that our inner game runs our outer game. So whatever we believe, whatever assumptions we hold, how mature our level of consciousness is, will dictate our behaviors and the demonstration of our skills. And so you will see that so much of our work starts with the inner game before we address the outer game. And I would say that's almost an upside down approach to what you see in many leadership development models. Many leadership development models start with the skill. And I've probably used this one before, but I'll use it again because it's one we can all relate to. Giving and receiving feedback is one of the hardest things for any of us to do, but especially for leaders. And so if I just took a competence or skill-based approach to feedback, I would say, all right, every leader needs to take our giving feedback course. We're going to teach you how to do it. We're going to role play with you. We're going to give you the tools, and then we expect you to go do it. If that's all that was required, then everyone would be great at giving feedback because there is so much learning out there related to the competence and skill of being able to do that. So what gets in the way of us being able to implement with our teams or with our peers what we have learned to do within the safety of a course or, you know, in the safety of the role play? And it's this idea of our inner game. It's the beliefs and assumptions we hold. So if I have a belief that giving feedback is mean or giving feedback is detrimental to someone because it will hurt their feelings, or I hold an assumption that if I give you feedback, you're not going to like me and you may reject me, then how often do you think that I'm going to engage in the skill of giving feedback, even if I made perfect marks within the course? You're right, probably slim to none, because the inner game runs the outer game. And so we spend a lot of time working on beliefs, working on assumptions that most of the time are there. Either they were experiences that happened to us in one instance that we've now globalized to all of our experiences. So we create some false narratives about those assumptions that if they were true once, they're true in all circumstances. Or we may have beliefs that come out of protecting ourselves from a fear that we have. So if I have a fear about being rejected or about being excluded or not belonging, then I'm probably not going to engage in behaviors that could put that at risk. And so much of the work that we do, when you look at our 360 assessments and even the work we do in coaching workshops, is designed to get under beliefs and assumptions that we may hold so that we can move past those to kind of increase our consciousness or increase our maturity so that we're capable of being able to take on the complexity of the things that are being thrown at us, or being able to implement the behaviors and the skills that we're learning. And so you'll see a lot of that, that the inner game will come before the outer game work, because otherwise we're just running at the wrong thing. Number six, psychological safety. We've talked a lot about this. This is part of our leadership principle of cultivating connection. And one of the ways that we do that is to build trust and belonging. And if we do not feel safe in our within our teams to be able to speak up, and this is really the definition of psychological safety, that I feel like I can show up as my true self. I can ask questions, I can make mistakes, I can share concerns without fear of judgment or repercussion. And this is work that comes out of Amy Edmondson, who's a researcher from Harvard. It is also the number one predictor of whether a team will be high performing or not, is the level of psychological safety on the team. And we know that if we really want to engage in true transformation, it's going to require a lot of vulnerability. It's going to require risk-taking. It's going to require creativity and innovation. And those things are the result when psychological safety is present. And so how can we help you and help your teams understand the nature of that so that within the team setting, because psychological safety is really a team level construct. As a leader, how can we help you to be respectful of psychological safety, but also know how to have the language to foster that so that you can have and create spaces where people feel safe to be vulnerable and transform in the ways that are needed? Because that leads us right into guiding principle number seven. Businesses don't transform, people do. So if we want our businesses to transform, the only way we can do that is to support our people through their own individual and team transformations. And the only way we can do that is through creating environments where psychological safety is prioritized. Really, really important work. It's not easy, but it's so important to everything that we want to have. All right, number eight. Number eight is based in Ronald Heifetz's work around technical problems versus adaptive challenges. And let's first of all kind of level set on what a technical problem is versus an adaptive challenge. And this is so critical, because I think most of the time when we're not achieving and we're not effective as a leader, it's because we're trying to treat adaptive challenges like they're technical problems. So if something is a technical problem, let me just give you some ideas about what that might look like. There are things that are very easy to identify. There's usually very cut and dry type of solutions to them. If you're an expert or you're an authority, there's probably a best practice around solving this problem. And when you go to look at a technical solution, it usually requires change in just one or a couple of places. There are things that can be implemented very, very easily. So for example, if I have high blood pressure, that's a technical problem. There's medication that can be prescribed. There's dietary things I can do. There are exercises that I can do that will help to lower my blood pressure because there is a known kind of set of circumstances that go around that. Now, when we have adaptive challenges, they're typically really difficult to identify because they're going to require us to change either something we value, something we believe. It may require us to change our approach. And so that's what we refer to as an adaptive challenge, because in order to get to where I need to go, I'm going to need to adapt in some way. And so it's not just going to require change in one or two places. It's probably going to require change in a number of places across a system. Instead of being an expert or a solution, or I'm sorry, an expert that is going to have the solution or an authority on the topic, when something is adaptive, the best people to solve it are the people with the problem. And the challenge with that is that because it requires us to adapt, people are often resistant to those kinds of changes. And the solutions are going to be more about experimentation and discovery versus a best practice. And so one of the things that we really spend a lot of time in our leadership development work is making sure that we're not trying to solve adaptive challenges with technical solutions. One of the best examples that I've seen of this, an example that will hit home, is people who have had heart challenges. And they go to the doctor, they've had a heart attack or they've had a stroke, and the doctor talks to them about the lifestyle changes that they will need to make in order to live. Now, this is a really critical situation. It's a life and death situation. So you'd think that being able to make the required change would be easy, whether that's a dietary change, a lifestyle change. And I don't know what the exact statistic is, but most people are unable to make the changes that they need to make because it requires them to adapt in a way that they're either unwilling or uncomfortable doing. And so, and this is not just something that I'd like to have. I mean, this is really the criticality of life and death. And yet people are unable to make those changes because they approach them as if they're a technical problem. Well, I'll just eat this new thing, or I'll just get up and walk every morning, or I'll just stop smoking. It's not that easy. That behavior change requires them to change a relationship they have with food, with a relationship they have with the behavior of smoking and what it's fulfilling for them, or a belief or a value that they hold. And so because we're not addressing them as adaptive challenges, we're not able to make that sustainable change. And so one of the things that we really spend time is uncovering the beliefs and assumptions, which we talked about earlier with the inner game work, to make sure that we're taking on adaptive challenges with adaptive solutions. All right, number 9, the best learning comes through the experience of doing. Now, of course, formal learning and classroom learning has a place, but if we're not able to help you apply your learning into the challenges that you're facing as leaders, it's going to fall short. If it's only good learning in the classroom, or if it only works in a role play or in a scenario, then we have not used your time or your efforts effectively. So you will see that in most of the work that we do, we're having you do the learning while you're working on a real business challenge that you're facing. That's true in the coaching workshops. It's true in some of our 360 and leadership development work, that we want you to practice in the flow of your work. Just like medicine is a practice, leadership is a practice. We get out there every day on the game field. We always have opportunities to put what we're learning into practice. And the more relevant it is to a challenge that you're facing and a challenge that you're working to overcome, the more impactful and the more embedded the learning is. So you'll see that most of the ways that we're helping you to learn is within the context of a real business challenge you're facing. And number 10, our leadership development team really exists because we are working to design transformational experiences that unlock leadership potential, not just for a few, not just for people that have determined to be high potential, but we believe that leadership development is for all leaders. And so we make our work available to all levels of leaders in the organization, including aspiring leaders. This podcast is a perfect example of that. This is learning that's available to everyone on your schedule. There is self-study learning because we also believe that there isn't one right development path for each person. The challenge that you're facing as a leader right now might be around building a new team and learning to relate to people that are different than you or people from different cultures. So the work that you may want to lean into is more around team building and team dynamics and building trust and belonging. We have resources to support you for that. Other leaders may need to be working on creating clarity because they're working to inspire impact and they need to help their teams understand roles and understand priorities. And so there's resources to help a leader who's working on creating more clarity. No one size fits all is going to be appropriate. So there are self-assessments that you can take, and there are a number of resources, whether you want to read an article, you want to watch a video, you want to listen to something, you want to read a book, or you want to engage in formal learning. Wherever is going to be the most supportive for you as a leader is where you can start. So that's it, our 10 guiding principles. I hope you find these as inspirational and as aspirational as we do, and that it helps you understand a little bit more about our approach to how we design learning to support you, but also to the concepts and where we're putting our emphasis. We believe in you, we're here for you, and we believe that every employee deserves to have a great leader. So keep working at being the best leader you can be. Until next time, I'll talk to you then. This podcast is an original production of Global Talent Management at Herman Miller Group. It's hosted by me, Heather Esposito, and produced in music by Sean Beck.